This is Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 3rd chapter, text 26. Can you go back? I just want to chant it once.
Evam vrimrishya shudhiyo bhagavantyanante sa.
Evam vrimrishya
shudhiyo bhagavanante sarvatmana vidate kalu bhava yogam.
Sarvatmana
vidate kalu bhava yogam. Te me na dhanda maharadhyata yada mirisham.
Te me na dhanda maharadhyanta yada mirisham.
Syat pata kam tarapi han churughaya bhada.
Syat
pata tarapi han churughaya bhada.
Translation. Considering all these points, therefore, intelligent men decide to solve all problems by adopting the devotional service of chanting the holy name of the Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart, and who is a mine of all auspicious qualities. Such persons are not within my jurisdiction for punishment. Generally, they never commit sinful activities, but even if by mistake or because of bewilderment or illusion, they sometimes commit sinful acts, they are protected from sinful reactions because they always chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Why don't we repeat that? Considering all these points, therefore, intelligent men decide to solve all problems by adopting the devotional service of chanting the holy name of the Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart, and who is a mine of all auspicious qualities. Such persons are not within my jurisdiction for punishment. Generally, they never commit sinful activities. But even if by mistake, or because of bewilderment or illusion, they sometimes commit sinful acts. They are protected from sinful reactions. Because they always chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Purport. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following verse from the prayer of Lord Brahma, Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 14th chapter, text 29. Atapite deva padam bhujadhaya. Prasada leshanu grihita ebahi janati tattum bhagavan mahimno na chanye kopi chiran vichinvan. The purport is that even though one is a very learned scholar of the Vedic Shastras, he may be completely unaware of the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his name, fame, qualities, and so forth. Whereas one who is not a great scholar can understand the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if he somehow or other becomes a pure devotee of the Lord by engaging in devotional service. Therefore, this verse spoken by Yamaraj says, Evam vimrishya shudhiyo bhagavati. Those who engage in the loving service of the Lord become shudhiya, intelligent. But this is not so of a Vedic scholar who does not understand Krishna's name, fame, and qualities. A pure devotee is one whose intelligence is clear. He is truly thoughtful because he engages in the service of the Lord, not as a matter of show, but with love, with his mind, words, and body. Non-devotees make a show of religion, but it is not very effective because although they ostentatiously attend a temple or church, they are thinking of something else. Such persons are neglecting their religious duty and are punishable by Yamaraj. But a devotee who commits sinful acts, which he may do unwillingly or accidentally because of his former habits, is excused. That is the value of the Sankirtan movement. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. So don't take advantage of this purport by thinking it's okay to commit sinful activities because I'm chanting Hare Krishna. But this is not given as an excuse or as an alternative or as a just in case I don't make it, I'm okay. But it's meant to glorify the holy name. And it's specifically meant to glorify the process of bhakti and distinguish it from the process of jnana, or simply knowing. So, most religions, especially Hinduism, are highly ritualistic. And people are so conditioned by ritual that they think if they just do the ritual, they're okay. It's like your doctor gives you some vitamins. But he tells you, but you don't understand, it's not just vitamins, it's diet, it's how you think, it's exercise, it's a whole program. But you think, if I just take the pills, I'm okay. So people think, at least in India, they think, if I do some puja, I'm okay. Right? You're from India? You're from India? Right? Do some puja, I'm okay. Not only am I okay, I'm more than okay. Because if I do enough puja, then I'll get some benefits, material benefits. Right? It's not enough to study your books. You have to do puja so you get good grades. Right? I thought it was enough. I mean, for Americans, it's enough to study. They get good grades without puja. But Indians think, studying's not enough. You have to do puja also. Correct? Tik? TK? That's the conditioning. So in a sense, the conditioning is good because they're recognizing, okay, we need to go to God because he has to. If he doesn't approve, how I won't remember anything on my final exam. I'll go blank. So that's good. So we think. But this, it's so deeply ingrained that that's what spirituality is. That's what religion is. It's doing a ritual. So now, what you have in India is very interesting. If you go to a temple, many temples, they have plates, and you can purchase these plates. And on the plates, you have something like one coconut, a banana, three sticks of incense, and some camphor. Right? Is that, how much does it cost? 10 rupees, 20 rupees?
Depends on where you
are. Depends on, if in Mumbai, then 300 rupees. Yeah. In a village, 20 rupees or something. So you buy this plate and you go and you give it to the pujari, right? And he offers it and then you get back some prasad. And probably 99.9999999% of the people, when they're offering that, are praying for what? Pure devotional service? No. They're praying for good job, good grades, good health, good husband, good wife. And, of course, they wouldn't forget to pray for the most important thing, money. Because money's the honey. Correct? Am I right? I am knowing these things. So, this is a huge problem to overcome. Now you may say, "Well, I'm American. We don't think this way." What this process is, it's bribing. Because when you give somebody something and you want something back, that's the dictionary definition of bribe, isn't it? Yes.
And yes. Judaism.
And Islam. And so these religions are based on bribing. If I do this, then I can ask this. I had a friend, we were young teenagers before we could drive. He had this little go-kart, which is it's a little cart that's on the, you know, it's basically the wheels are like 12 inches, and it's a little cart. So you're practically on the ground, and it's got a lawnmower motor. But that was a big thing for like a 12 or 13-year-old to drive that thing. So we'd go to his house. Our real intention was to drive the go-kart, because that was exciting for us. We'd go to his house and be nice to him and play with him, and after half an hour, I'd say, by the way, Would you like to ride the go-kart? Why don't we ride the go-kart? So we're just, you know, we didn't really like him, but we bribed him by our presence and being nice. Okay, so we understand that, and this is a conditioning that goes very deep, that God is there, he's the Father. You always ask the Father for something, right? Don't you? When you need money, who do you call? Your father or the banker? Call your father. Father first, banker second. If the father fails, then you can go to the bank or go to your friend. But first resort is the Father. So God's the Father, that's where you go. You ask for things. So that doesn't work. The other point Prabhupada's making is that if you know, if you have knowledge, that doesn't work either. Because just because you have knowledge doesn't mean you have bhakti. You have any love. You don't get love by knowledge. Prabhupada, I don't know if I told you this story, but I'll tell this story. It's a really wonderful story. This man came to see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He had many questions. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was busy. He said, I'm busy now. You can ask my disciples. They can answer your questions. So he went to the disciples. The disciples had just finished the noon arti, and they were cleaning the deity's plates. So they told him, we're cleaning the plates. If you don't mind waiting till we finish, then we can answer your questions. They said, actually, why don't you help us clean the plates? This is India. You know, it was India in probably 1925. So perhaps the professor was a Brahmin. They allowed him in. He cleaned the plates. After he cleaned the plates, he asked. They asked him, so you have some questions you'd like to put to us? And he said, no. He said, while I was cleaning the plates, all my questions were answered. Or he said, no, I think he went back to Bhaktisiddhanta and said, so they answered your questions? And he explained, no, they were answered while I was cleaning the plates. So the whole goal of Krishna consciousness, it's not ritual and it's not knowledge for knowledge's sake. It's knowledge to know how to please Krishna. That's the knowledge we want. Not just that you know things. I know so many things. The main thing is to know how to please Krishna. So I'll tell you a story. Would you like to hear a story? This is a really nice story. Did you know that in the 1970s we had a political party and we had candidates running for office? Balavanta was running for governor or mayor. It was called the In God We Trust Party. So they asked Prabhupada, what's our platform? Prabhupada said, don't address the issues that they're addressing, the little, you know, should we build highways here or have a railway here or a subway here or a bus line here or raise the tax or lower the tax. He said, don't do that. He said, just give Krishna consciousness. Now you would think, how are you going to win an election just giving Krishna consciousness? Because you're not dealing with the issues. Anyway, that's what Prabhupada instructed. So he said that basically what he did, he would go out there and just preach Krishna consciousness. You know, the philosophy, we're suffering, birth and death, sinful activities, sinful reactions, nobody's happy, and so forth. So Balavanta wrote Prabhupada and said, I don't think we're going to get many votes preaching this way, I mean, you know, on this platform. And Prabhupada said, it doesn't matter. And he said, I could see that you have not compromised. Just like my spiritual master, he never compromised. Then I can see you have done the same. So Krishna is pleased with you. And I am proud of you. He said, and therefore that is our success. You see what success is. Success is pleasing Krishna. That's it. That's all. That's what bhakti is all about. Nothing more, nothing less. If we can do that, everything's good. Now, Prabhupada uses this word in this purport, ostentatious. Ostentatious is an interesting word. It has different meanings depending on how you apply it. One meaning is showy. You make a big show. You know, like you. You know the Brahmins? They can be quite showy. You know it's a big show if you've ever seen the Brahmins chanting mantras. Right? It's quite a show. It's not, generally it's not too subtle. It's very showy. And people like that, don't they? They feel like, you're chanting mantras for me, make a big show, we'll have more shakti or something. And as we know, there are many so-called religious people who preach the word, and it's very showy, very dramatic, very well rehearsed. Ostentatious also means pretentious. Pretentious comes from the word pretending. What does Prabhupada say in the last few lines of the purport? He says, non-devotees make a show of religion, but it is not very effective because although they ostentatiously attend a temple or a church, they are thinking of something else. Such persons are neglecting their religious duties. Isn't that amazing? Look at the next line. But a devotee who commits sinful acts, which he may do unwillingly or accidentally because of his former habits, is excused. In other words, a devotee's motive is different. He's doing it to please Krishna. Where are these other people? They do the ritual perfectly, but if it's to show off, make a big show, pretend you're a devotee, what's the point? So Krishna, he appreciates the pure heart and intention, even if you fail. Isn't that amazing? That's what Krishna, and that's why you have this verse in 9th chapter, Apichat Sudaracharo. And long purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And he describes in this verse, you know this verse, even if one commits abominable acts, he's considered a sadhu. And Vishwanath Chakravarti gives a purport and he gives all the objections. You know that purport?
What? I did the whole thing yesterday.
You just read it?
I read the
Oh, tell
the
us.
And then I did Vishwanath.
And what did he say? Something like, No, but he's a woman hunter, and he's yeah. Tell us what he said. It's fresh in your memory.
So many things. The final thing was, he's even if he's addicted, he can't give up his sinful activities. He's going to die trying to serve Krishna, and he's thinking, I am the worst person. I'm just going to keep trying to serve Krishna despite these addictions. And Krishna. That's a saintly person.
Hare Krishna. Perfect. What's that all about? It's all about the desire, the motive. Not about what you produce externally. Very important point. You see, if you look at Krishna Leela from an analytical point of view, trying to understand what is the essence of the Leela, or trying to understand what Krishna wants. Just like when you have a relationship with another person, often you want to understand what they want, what makes them happy. Either it's another devotee, it's a guru, it's a husband or wife. You want to understand what makes them tick, what are they, and what ticks them off. Right? So if you look at, so to speak, what makes Krishna tick, what makes him tick? If you study his pastime, what are his pastimes all about? You look at Krishna, he left Vrindavan. You look at Mahaprabhu, he took sannyas. He left his wife, left his mother, left so many devotees. It looks like Krishna's causing pain. Why did he do it? Because?
Actually, that's the highest, bringing out the love of separation. In separation, you actually feel more intense.
Yes, exactly.
So he was bringing that out.
It's a perfect answer. Separation is more in the emotion of separation is more intense than the emotion when you're present. You know, when you're with somebody, you take them for granted. And how much we don't take them for granted when we find out they left their body. And then we remember, oh, I took him for granted. I should have got his or her association more. So, what's Krishna doing? He's leaving Vrindavan. Mahaprabhu is taking sannyas. Why? To increase the affection. That's it. That's what makes Krishna tick, affection. So it's all about affection. And therefore, he's called Rasaraj. That's all he's interested in. So now, an interesting point comes from this, because we all have service. So we could say, well, does it really matter if it's all about affection, if my service is on level A, level B, level C, level D? Does it really matter? And the answer is yes and no. Because the real thing is the bhakti, right? But sometimes the bhakti will manifest externally in the service if it's not done well. I'll give you a story. Prabhupada had cooks, and these cooks would travel with him, or he'd get a cook where he went, wherever he was staying, because he had special diet. But in Australia, he ate Mahaprasad, the Didi Prasad. It was the only place, as far as I'm aware, that he ate the prasadam. And he appreciated the prasadam so much. So there's a story. One evening they served him puris. You know the story? And the puris were perfect. And as Prabhupada was eating them, he asked, who cooked? And it was Korma who cooked them, Korma Das, Korma Prabhu. So they asked Korma to come. Prabhupada said, thank you for following the principles of Krishna consciousness. By tasting these puris, I can tell that you're following the principles of Krishna consciousness and chanting 16 rounds a day. Isn't that interesting? So sometimes the results are manifestations of the bhakti. And if the bhakti isn't there, the results won't be there. At least that's how I used to think when I made puris. I said, if I have bhakti, they'll puff up. Now I have another story. It's very heavy. I hope this doesn't give you indigestion. But we have to tell it because it happened. Srila Prabhupada came to Detroit in 1975. I had the great fortune of being there for the summer. It is at that time that he saw the Fisher Mansion and very much approved of it and asked the devotees to purchase it. Prabhupada negotiated the deal and then he left for Toronto. And as he was gone, it was expected that the negotiations would continue. Two things happened while Prabhupada was gone. Number one, the man who was selling the property had second thoughts. I'm not sure why. Do you know why? Some people were telling him you shouldn't sell to the Hare Krishnas, something
couldn't
like
that. Could he make more money?
Maybe.
I think that's what the thing is. They thought they could make more money than what they could get.
Or he realized he got bamboozled by Prabhupada Shakti. Because Prabhupada asked him to donate it.
Right.
I think they sold it for asking $350,000. And I think Prabhupada negotiated $300,000. But Prabhupada told his devotees that, he said, each room is worth $300,000. Anyway, the devotees had second thoughts also because it was one of the worst neighborhoods in one of the most dangerous cities in the world. And they thought, maybe, they had second thoughts, maybe it's not such a good idea to have a temple here. It's dangerous for us. It's not a good place for us to live, and people may not want to come here. So they called Srila Prabhupada in Toronto to explain that the owner was having second thoughts about selling. And we are also having second thoughts about buying. And Prabhupada told the GBC, he said, unless you get this building, what is the use of going on? You imagine your spiritual master gave you that ultimatum? Unless you succeed in this service, what is the use of living? Now, we can say that Prabhupada knew we could get the building. Therefore, he gave that instruction. And we could say that Prabhupada saw we were becoming mental, and he had to give an instruction like that to get us off the mental platform. But still, in this case, pleasing Krishna meant pleasing Prabhupada meant getting that building. So we can't fake it. So when the guru gives an order like that, it really doesn't have any ultimatum other than to succeed. That's what it means to please Krishna. Now, we have the other side, and we have to have the intelligence to know when we are pleasing Krishna and when we're not, when we're failing. We have another story. Would you like to hear another story? You like stories?
We like stories, but first I have a question. Quick one. You just said that we have to use our intelligence to know whether we're pleasing Krishna or not. How do we know whether we're pleasing Krishna or not? Maybe I'm just not intelligent.
That's possible. Let me tell the other story, and then I'll confuse you even more. Or perhaps you'll understand. We'll see. One of the ways I teach is I try to confuse people as best I can and resolve it. Occasionally I don't resolve it, and they come out more confused than they came in. But at least you have questions. Last the other night, Achyutananda Prabhu was giving class, and he said at the end of class, Prabhupada asked, are there any questions? And no one had any questions. He said, why you don't have any questions? You know everything? So, as we know, when Srila Prabhupada came to America, he was alone. And the first year was extremely difficult, and it seemed like he was having no success. And one of the things he wanted to do was get help from his godbrothers or the disciples of his godbrothers. And there was one disciple of one of Prabhupada's godbrothers who was interested in coming to help Prabhupada. And he had been corresponding with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, yes, please come. And he had then discussed the matter with his spiritual master. And his spiritual master had a certain opinion. I forget the detail. Maybe Sureshwar, you remember. But he expressed the opinion of his spiritual master. And something to the point that because you're doing it this way, you won't be successful. You didn't do it the right way. Well, I don't know. What was it?
Ludicrous.
Ludicrous, yeah. Your attempts will be ludicrous. And what was the reason? Because he wasn't getting authorization?
Yeah, I forget. I have to look at it again. But that word was so bad.
He didn't get permission from his spiritual master. He told, I'm coming to help you.
No, but his spiritual master says it. That's ludicrous.
The effort, it's a waste of time, basically. Yeah. Something like that. So he couldn't come. It was disappointing. And he mentioned the word, I believe, in this letter, it won't be successful. And then Prabhupada wrote back, he said, we're all soldiers in the field. So it doesn't matter if we're successful, but what matters is we execute the order of the guru, and that's our success. So then we have this example that the guru gave an order. We did it to please the guru, and it doesn't matter how successful we are or we are not, because we executed the order. To me, Prabhupada's success was that he got on the Jaladuta. Simply, when he got his foot on the Jaladuta, that was it. He was successful. Because at that point, he fulfilled the order of his guru. That was his success. That's it. And he wanted to come back to America. It was so difficult. He wanted to come back to India. And he wrote his godbrother. And his godbrother, Sridhar Maharaj, said, you stay in America to execute your mission, even if you die there. Don't give up. So that was his mood. So we're staying, we're executing it, even if we're failing. But this is the order of the guru. So of course we want to succeed. So, but if we don't, still we know we're pleasing the guru. So now your question, well, how do I know I'm pleasing the guru? So you have some examples, like Prabhupada specifically wanted certain things. He wanted to build a temple in Bombay, in Juhu, and there were legal disputes that had to be dealt with. And the devotees messed up. And that was a huge blow to Prabhupada. They made a huge mistake, foolishly. Not good. When you're dealing with something very important to Krishna, Krishna's devotees, your guru, don't mess it up. That will not be pleasing to them. Prabhupada wanted land in Mayapur. It was difficult to get. He sent his best men. They secured the land. Something that's that important, you can't mess it up. Now, there's another story. You know the story in Dallas when they painted the deity, and then the paint didn't dry, and first Prabhupada said, why did you paint the deity? And then they took turpentine to take the paint off, and Prabhupada's saying, how can you put turpentine on Krishna? He was so mad, he was so angry, because they were taking the deity like some statue. And Krishna was being, I don't want to say tortured, what's the word? Krishna was being...
Unexpected.
Yeah, offended. So in answer to your question, how do you know when your spiritual master calls you a fool and a rascal? That's one way you know. You also know by if the Vaishnavas are pleased with your service. And sometimes you have to the only way you know is in your own heart that you did your best. So this is important because sometimes, especially, it's very easy to have a complex that we think, I'm so bad, I'm so rotten, everything I do is wrong. And so everything we do, we feel bad. It lacks. Which is, it's okay to feel that way if that inspires you. But if it depresses you, it's not good. So the point in this purport, the point I'm making is if we do our best to please Krishna and we know we've given our best, we should be satisfied. As Prabhupada was satisfied, even when nobody came, that he was pleasing his guru. As he was satisfied with Balavanta, that he was preaching pure Krishna consciousness and getting few votes, but it didn't matter. Krishna was pleased. Yes?
So actually, me and I think it was Padma were discussing this the other day. So how do we know if we're trying our best?
If you don't know, who does? You have to know.
How do we know if we're really trying our best? Like we're, you know,
we have to be honest.
Yeah, you have to know. You have to know.
You can't say, "Oh, I'm doing my best," but really knowing you're not. I mean, you can't wake up a sleeping person that's pretending to be asleep. You can say, "Wake up, wake up."
Right.
Oh, you know, if somebody insincere, you're not going to be able to do so. I mean, you have to at least be sincere.
Yeah. I mean, of course. Also, we have material limitations. So we may be comparing ourselves to somebody else and thinking, well, they're so successful and I'm not. So like Chaitanya Das is saying, sincerity, that's that. If you're sincerely trying, then that's your best. Of course, we can always do better. Are we? We can always look, how could I do this better? Could I do it better? How could I have done it better? How could I improve? Am I thinking the wrong way? Of course, that's there. But it's a little dangerous to compare ourselves to others because we all have service in the mission of Krishna. And somebody's service is to have 10,000 disciples and somebody's service is to have 10 and somebody's service is to have none. And somebody's service is to deliver thousands of people and not have any disciples and just be the person who takes out the trash and fixes the cars and goes down in history as the one who's going to inspire people in Krishna consciousness for the next 10,000 years. Jayananda Prabhu. So everyone has a particular service according to their nature. So in determining if we're pleasing Krishna, we shouldn't compare necessarily. I mean, you may wish to compare yourself, but it can have positive or negative influence. You can compare yourself by becoming inspired and saying, how low I am compared to this devotee. But to be depressed that you're not like him or may never be like him may not be the best thing, but you want to find who you are and how you can best serve and how you can best please Krishna. The whole thing is about pleasing Krishna, and it's not easy. You know, one thing that I notice in our movement, when people are looking for a guru, often they're looking more at what the guru can give them than what they can give the guru. But what can this guru give? It's like they're going shopping. You know, what do they have at Walmart? Well, let's check out Target. Well, let's go to the mall. Let's see what they have there. Isn't it? You notice that? What's this guru giving? Well, let's try this guru. Let's see. Well, maybe if I take initiation from him, it'll be easier for me. I won't have to try as hard. He has more shakti. He'll give more kripa. I'm having such a hard time getting up. If I take diksha from this guru, maybe his kripa will wake me up. I heard he has a what do they call those calls? Yeah, he has at four in the morning, he wakes his disciples up. He has it, you know. He's a high-tech guru, you know. He's got it lined up. Every disciple gets a call at 4 o'clock around the world, you know. That's the guru I want. The same way, Giriyashrami, at one of the japa retreats, people were saying, I don't have a taste, I don't know what it is. And everyone's like, so many devotees were depressed. I don't have a taste, I'm trying to get a taste, but it's not there. What's wrong with me, this and that. And Maharaj said, don't always think what the holy name is for you, but think what you are for the holy name.
My fellow Americans, ask not.
I knew I heard that.
What your country, what your guru can do for you, rather ask what you can do for your guru.
Jai. Bhakta Bhav goes down in history. So the last time I was here, I was making the point that we're all very geared up, conditioned, wired to think about what makes us happy, makes us feel good. And so then it carries over into Krishna consciousness. So here's the icing on the cake of the icing on the cake of this class is Krishna just wants your what? What does he want?
Love.
Krishna
love.
Just wants your what?
Love.
Your money?
Your heart. Your bhakti.
Your book points.
Krishna.
All of them.
Just like if you study psychology, you want to hear something funny? This is a riot, but it's good for you to know this in case you don't know it. You study psychology, you'll find out in male-female relationships, what the wife wants most is affection, and what the man wants most is respect. When they ask men, do you care if your wife doesn't love you? And they say, What about if she doesn't respect you? Oh, that's huge. If she doesn't respect me, then. But Krishna's like the woman. He wants the love. That's what makes him move. So whenever we ask Krishna for something, unless it's for pure devotional service, unless it's to increase our devotional service, then it's antagonistic to that principle of love, right? And that's all he wants. And when you give him that, everything is perfect.
I thought Krishna was a male.
What's going on? We all know about the babies who weren't touched, and you know about the babies who weren't touched and died. I don't know what crazy persons did this. what crazy experiment they did, that they didn't touch babies.
They put them all together, they were actually going to try to see if they could come up with a language that would be a universal language. They gave them everything they needed, just left them alone, and they didn't die. And opposed to that, there was another experiment where they put like six men and six women in a room together and told them they could do anything they wanted. And they started goofing off and hitting each other with pillows or whatever. And then they started having sex, and after that, it just all turned violent.
Wow.
So they put a bunch of adults together, tell them they can do anything they want, and they'll kill each other. And put a bunch of babies together and don't touch them, they'll die.
They died?
Yeah. Babies died, yeah, because they didn't get the affection.
What happened to scientists? Someone should experiment on scientists.
You know, Prabhupada told a joke. They established a bank in the temple in Vrindavan, and he told a joke. He said, if you need a heart transplant, you should get a banker's heart, because a banker's heart has never been used. I think in America, I have to change it to lawyer. So what Krishna is doing is, in his leela, if you look at his leela, he's just extracting love. More and more. Krishna's like a vacuum cleaner that extracts love from the heart of his devotee. So he does things to extract love. Because Krishna thrives on love. That's what keeps him, I don't want to say keeps him alive. But that's what, for lack of a better word, that's what Krishna keeps Krishna alive. It's the love of his devotee. Right? So you see, Radharani gets mad at Krishna. Why does Radharani get mad at Krishna? What does that do to Krishna? It just makes him more attached to Radharani, right? So the devotee does everything to pull the love of Krishna's heart, and Krishna does everything to pull the love of the devotee's heart. And I think this verse, Apichet Sarachara, because Krishna loves the devotee so much because of the heart, that even the devotee fails externally, Krishna sees the heart. Just like Prabhupada, he saw the heart. He accepted everybody back. Anyone who wanted to serve, no matter what they did, no matter how bad it was, he accepted them back as long as they wanted to serve. And it was only when they rejected Prabhupada that he rejected them. And that was very rare. Only a few people who didn't want to follow him. And then Prabhupada said, what can I do? So do whatever you want.